proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th of December, Anno Domini 2010, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Here we go. Even the Grinch is upset with Apple over iPhone's inability to allow in-app charitable donations. Although the policy is long-standing, one nonprofit consultant is hoping to turn up the heat with an online petition during a season when lots of people donate to charity. The petition, as of this writing, had nearly 2,000 signatures. Nonprofit iPhone apps can only send users to external websites where they must type in all their payment information. It's a cumbersome process, according to Beth Cantor, who started the petition and created the Grinch versus Steve Jobs image, which you can see all over the place. In protest, Cantor has switched from the iPhone to Android. Apple allows in-app purchases on its iOS devices, but like everything else in the App Store, Apple takes a cut of the transaction. A profit for the Apple, profit for Apple wouldn't go over well for charitable donations. So to make exceptions, Apple would then have to get in the business of separating legitimate charity apps from bogus enterprises. Still, Apple has even crushed workarounds to this problem. In August, PayPal added a donation feature to its app using a third party called MissionFish to handle the administrative duties. 2 months later, after PayPal had collected more than $10,000 in donations, Apple ordered the feature's removal. PayPal is now about to introduce a similar feature for its Android app. I doubt that Apple couldn't allow charitable donations on a case-by-case basis, as the company has allowed exceptions to its own rules before. When Apple purged overtly sexual content from the App Store in last February, it created a double standard for apps with previously and I quote, previously published material available broadly in a well-accepted format, unquote. Apps from Playboy and Sports Illustrated were allowed to remain because their publishers were well-known. Why not apply a similar standard for large charities such as the American Cancer Society and waive Apple's cut for in-app payments? Obviously, if being sent to an external website is what deters you from making a donation, you're being kind of a Scrooge. But the reality is that people will put off donations when the process is inconvenient, and in-app solutions would eliminate that barrier. It's time for Apple to make it happen. So, our poll this week at our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is as follows. Apple's refusal to allow in-app charitable donations. And the choices are pretty stupid, a great idea, don't you dare say bad things about my Stevie, and who cares, I never donate to charity anyway. So far, today we've got 28 votes. Most of you think it's pretty stupid. Now, this is one of those things that I know kind of boils the blood of some of you. So, simply clicking on a choice in a poll is not really going to be enough for you. Well, that's okay. We have a way for you to vent your spleen, at least up to 255 characters. If you look at the yellow box underneath the poll, you can click on my website. That's or click on give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And you can then answer the opinion question, which is should Apple allow in-app charitable donations? And if so, how? Because they're not saying that, you know, charitable donations are bad. They're just saying they just don't have the time to decide what is and what isn't an actual charitable institution that it would be legitimate to give stuff to. I don't know. I'd kind of look at things like the American Cancer Society, the Red Cross,
or do by the federal
Doctors Without Borders,
do by their federal filing. I mean, you know, if they're a true corp, they're going to be, you know, have a non-registered or non-profit something filed to be legit. I mean, then that way there is no getting in trouble with the government when you go ahead and submit something saying, well, they said they were tax deductible.
Well, apparently Apple really doesn't have enough money to hire somebody to do that. And you got to feel sorry for any company that's close to the bone. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we know you have something to say about this, so give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And, of course, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. But before you do any of that...
We got a few announcements.
We got a few announcements.
One, for sure, that I can talk about that I'm going to have to get going this week. I figure I'll make them on Wednesday, and then that way they've got Thursday, Friday. Yeah, they should be ready by Saturday.
Excellent.
And for you folks that are new to us and listening to us here on member supported Jazz 901, I'm talking about the Rumballs. And if you want to find out how maybe you can even partake in some of these Rumballs, we got a task for you.
Why, in order to partake of them, we'd have to be somewhere they could be.
And you know what? If they go to the Jazz, that's www.jazz901.org website, we have a secret there that you can find out.
You have to scroll down a couple of items to find it, but
we've got a special announcement there. And
you should check that out and make your plans accordingly.
Yes. And like I say, I'll have Rumballs ready. And if you, as our other listeners have, followed us around on that, know we have raved about them. And a few folks have been able to partake in them. And this is your chance to do that.
They are astonishing.
Also, I'm going to put in another
You do have to show proof of age, though.
Oh, yes.
In order to have one of these. Trust me on that.
And one of the other things, while you're at the webpage, since I can go ahead and get this liner in here right now while we're talking about the website, is Rob is also giving away a stocking full of Jazz. And if you go to the website, you can email from there and give him your name, address, phone number, and a reason why you should get in on this stocking full of Jazz. This guy is crazy, folks. He has literally gone into the library and gotten some really good Jazz, put it together in the stocking that he's going to give away Christmas Eve. He's actually going to be doing the show here Christmas Eve. And if you want to get in on it, go there, send him an email. Or if you don't, also on that webpage will be the address to where you can mail in your postcard. And the postcard, again, we'll just want the basic information and why you think you should get in that. And he's going to draw a lucky winner.
I'll tell you what. This is one of those few, very, very few rare times when I wish I wasn't on this station. Because being on this station makes me ineligible to get into the drawing.
Well, I was, Thursday night, again, another shameless plug here. I'm doing every other Thursday nights. I'll be on again the end of the month. But, just discovering some of the Jazz that I've been able to do, and some of my listeners now that have been calling. And no, Rob, your mother, I won't tell her not to call me. She likes what I'm playing. But no, it was a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing a lot more Thursdays here and there and bringing the folks the type of Jazz that I kind of like. And like I say, I had a number of folks call in, and I want to thank them again for listening to me. And I think we had a good time. I've got some kinks that I still have to work out, but I know that. And, for only my second time doing the show alone, I don't think I did too bad, but it's fun. And like you say, all the Jazz that's in that library. It's like a kid in a candy store.
Really is. It really is.
It is unbelievable.
It really is quite amazing.
It's just a lot of fun. And then to be able to do this show here too Saturdays, it's a win-win situation for me.
Yeah, it really is. I have to tell you, I was very impressed this week because Google announced the Google Chrome OS notebook, they're calling it. It isn't out yet. I'm not quite sure what the release date is, but you'll be able to actually get Chrome OS. I suppose available for download as well. I don't know, but it's the CR48, and it's from Google. The ones that I saw had no labels on them at all. So they were like little ninja notebooks. They didn't have anybody's name. They didn't have any company's name. They didn't even say Google on them.
Oh, really?
But when you boot them up, you boot up into the Chrome OS, which is almost entirely nothing but the Chrome web browser. And then you go to Gmail for mail.
Okay.
You go to Google Docs to do document type stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they are, I don't know how to put this. They're, the apps, Google apps, are not actually as full featured as, you know, the let's say the Microsoft Office suite or OpenOffice. On the other hand, most people don't ever use 99% of the features.
I was going to say, how much of it?
Of a full-fledged Office suite. So for general use, it's wonderful. And I'll tell you what, I'm working with a company, an outside company right now. And when we sit down and write documents together, we all get in Google Docs. Mm-hmm. And we can all edit the documents simultaneously as we're chatting about it. And you can see everybody's edits. They can see your edits. It's the most cool thing ever. And, of course, Google Docs is free.
Mm-hmm.
You can also move your organization, your company, to Google Docs. And you get your mail through Gmail, and you get your, you know, you get to use the docs. And then there's all sorts of additional things that you get as well. And that's ridiculously cheap per year. In terms of, you know, what you're paying per person, I forget, but it's very, very, very
nominal,
small. Right? To put your company there. If you're a not-for-profit, of course, it's free anyway. And what that does is that removes from you the need to do, you know, to hire tech people, but which is bad for us, but good for them. But I tell you what, it's quite an amazing little device, and they say it well. Who's really seen one yet? Nobody. But they say the battery lasts for days, and I'm quoting, I'm putting quotes around that. But it looks like an awfully cool toy.
I'd question, you know, all right, when they say days.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I put quotes around it. I don't know what that means yet either.
Usage.
Right.
Definitely not on the internet.
Well, right. If you're somebody like me who's on the internet 10, 12 hours a day, I doubt you're going to get days out of it.
A day.
But that's still respectable. I take a day.
Yeah, I mean, that's still respectable. I mean, if I can take a unit and start out in the morning and go out there, you know, and be doing my surfing and writing letters and then going back and doing some emails and maybe some more surfing, and then by the end of the day, then I get a warning that maybe my battery's getting low, that I can live with, you know, and then, all right, I come home that evening, I plug it back in, it gets charged. I'm good to the next day.
That's exactly right. If I'm in my office or at home, I've got it plugged in. If I go to a cafe, something like that, I'm really not going to sit there for 10 hours, generally speaking. Now, people are always telling me, well, you know, it's useless without the web. It's completely useless without the web. Yeah, I get that. But really, how often do you pull over to the side of the road to write a document?
Yeah, really.
You know, most of the time you're somewhere where you have access to Wi-Fi. And if you really have to pull over the side of the road and write a document, pull out your Droid. Because you can write documents in Google Docs on your Droid. You know, that's a lovely excuse to not contemplate it, but it's not a reason.
Right. Oh, one of the other things I want to dispel, since we're talking about Christmas stuff and everything else, there's been quite a few ads, and we've talked about it here before. They now have this pad, and it looks like this nice shiny pad that you can either throw your iTouch on or your phone on it.
Oh, yeah,
and
they
make it look...
Induction charging.
Yeah, they make it look like, folks, all you got to do is simply put it on there, and it'll charge it. You don't need those other cords. Here is the one thing, and again, this is just, you know, us trying to help you folks make smart decisions, because I'd hate you to go ahead and buy that and then all of a sudden realize, oh, they're going to need that too. And what I'm talking about is, yeah, you can buy this unit and it will charge things by just simply setting it on it. But what you have to do is for each of the devices that you're going to hook up to it and lay it down on there. So like, say I got my cell phone and I got my iTouch. I have to go out and get these adapters by this company that will fit on the back of that phone or iTouch so that when I go to just set it down, it will charge it.
Yeah,
these are additional accessories that you have to buy for each device that you're just going to arbitrarily lay down there and right. have it automatically.
Yeah, it's a two-piece system. You've got the charging base, and then every device has to have a charging receiver on it.
Right.
Right. And that, by the way, changes the contour of the device. So if you've got, for example, a clip that you put it in the car or a clip that you put it in on your belt, mm-hmm. right? And maybe even a pouch. Like I put mine in a pouch.
Yeah.
It might, in fact, be too big to fit in that pouch.
Yeah.
So it definitely isn't going to fit in the clips.
Means
so you're either constantly taking
more.
The thing. Exactly yeah. right. So you're either constantly taking the thing on and off. I don't want to know how, twice now, you've butt-dialed me. How the hell do you do that when it's sitting in a pouch? How do you butt-dial me when it's sitting in a pouch?
I got a talented ass.
Apparently you do. I do not understand.
I do it. I don't tell a lot of folks. You can ask. Just feel you're part of the family.
I don't, you're part
of the family.
Thank you. I appreciate you have no idea.
My butt likes to die you and a bunch of other folks.
And they sit there and say,
I know you must have butt dialed because all I hear is the radio going to something else or you're talking something else. You know, okay.
My phone gets lonely. My wife butt dialed me one day and said, you have a flip phone. How did you butt dial me?
Huh?
I don't know. Okay,
I never dial. On my flip, I never butt dial.
It's the whole point of a flip.
I have turned it around. So hopefully, because I had it this way in the case.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe, even though it's locked.
Yeah.
I mean, I hit the lock button. So it's locked. I mean, shouldn't we?
No, I get
so
that.
Somehow it's unlocking itself
and
then
calling
dialing.
People.
Yeah.
It's
all right,
lonely.
Listen, before we get too carried away talking to ourselves, give us a call. Yeah, exactly. Give us a call. You know the number, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We had an interesting time last night in Second Life. Not a lot of people showed up, but we had a real nice chit-chat. It's the holidays. I get that. We had a real nice chit chat and we got a new person who came in. She was very excited to find us and went to get her husband who she couldn't find. But of course she came in at like 10:30. So we were pretty much
toast
done anyway, but it was really kind of nice.
And, a lot of good questions.
A couple of good questions. We had a real nice time and we also talked about other stuff. Well, the heck were we mostly talking? We were talking about
the science fiction.
Yeah, we're talking about
Perry Rodan.
Oh, Perry Rodan. We talked a lot about Perry Rodan.
I was at a Christmas party with a bunch of science fiction fans, and none of them had ever heard of him.
Then they are not, in fact, true science. I'm sorry.
But they are not true science fiction fans. Wikipedia calls Perry Rodan the best science fiction
ever.
It's sold over a billion copies.
It is the definitive science fiction. But it's German.
We'll have to ask George when he comes in.
That's part of the problem. But yeah, right. Well, but also you have to remember that if you talk to most of the people who write stuff like space opera, they will tell you Perry Rodan was their influence. And if you don't know that, then you're not a real science fiction fan. I'm sorry. Don't care what you say. I look forward to your emails. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Jan Niffler. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Now there's a woman with a voice for radio.
Isn't she?
No question.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
She was a nice switch to the morning.
She really is. She's the morning drive person, and she's not the morning drive. She's not. Yeah, six
yeah,
to nine.
She, yeah, she's six to nine. Six to nine, and congratulations, Jan. She just started on Monday.
Yep.
Her new position there. We kind of shift
first
things
week
around.
Was phenomenal.
Yep. And, you know, kind of just shifting everything around. That's one nice thing about the station. You know, they just don't let things just, you know.
Yep. Shift it around, get it.
Get it right.
All right. And so, yeah, don't forget, go to jazz901.org. Scroll down a bit on the main page, and you'll see something very exciting that we'll be doing So you need to check that out, take a look, put it on your calendar, plan it out, et cetera, et cetera.
It is Elm Grove.
Don't say anything.
That's all I'm going to say.
It's all right. Good. So definitely check it out and see what we're up to and make your plans accordingly. In the meantime, we are going to go to the phones, and our first caller is Steve from Rochester, New York, hub of civilization in the Western world. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
My son has a Dell laptop. It's about 6 or 8 months old, and he cannot install anything that is not Windows software. It's a Windows 7 machine, and he's tried installing Photoshop, and it won't install. He can't install iTunes.
Right. You have to get the Windows versions of those programs. The Windows operating system can only run Windows software.
It is Windows. They are the Windows versions.
But you're saying a non-Microsoft version.
Right, exactly.
Product.
He says it'll download .win stuff, but anything, and he thinks it's something to do with Windows Trusted Installer.
Yeah, during the install, well, most of the big companies like Adobe and Apple, that it would be a Windows Trusted Installer, but it will ask you for permission.
Yeah, to do it, and you just got to say yes.
And you should say yes. Maybe at one time he said no and never again.
Could be.
Is there a way to fix it, or is it easier just to take it someplace and... he spent a lot of time trying to install it. He spent hours on the phone with Adobe, and they said forget it.
Yeah, no, what he's got to do is he can do a Google search or go to the Microsoft website, and it's the trust issue. Within Windows 7, software installation and trust, he can do a search on the FAQs there, and because I honestly don't know, I haven't learned it by memory yet.
It's 17 dialog boxes down. I just found a process to...
It's buried in there, and, you know, like I say, I haven't committed it to memory yet, but it'll walk you through the various steps how to get down there and change it. Because, yes, you can sit there and say, no. The reason they do it is they don't want some folks sometimes installing all kinds of stuff on there, so they turn it off for everybody.
Okay, and this is you go to Windows.
Steve is going to put up a link.
Yeah, you get properties on the System32 directory.
Yeah. The big thing now, this is his personal laptop, or does it belong to work?
No, it's his personal one.
Yeah. We often see this in terms of work machines that someone has locked down the group policy.
No, this is a high school kid who told me he had to get a laptop so the family computer could get opened up again. And
Yep. I know about that. Definitely check. Tell him if he's been fooling around with the group policies, he needs to stop.
Steve will put the link there.
But to check out the link that Steve's just put up.
Okay, and that'll be on the Soundbites website?
Sure, that's on the Soundbites website.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah,
our pleasure.
Yep. Bye.
It's interesting. Microsoft has done...
It's better than Vista.
It's
better than Vista.
It's a catch-22 to keep the bad stuff out and let the good stuff in.
Right. It's what Apple and Linux have been doing for years.
Yeah, but it's the people
not allowing you to do things unless you're administrator. And however, they've done it in a very odd way. They've made it difficult enough to figure out how to do that even people who legitimately have the right to do that are confused. So it's very sad to watch people struggle with this. Windows is not as easy or as simple as it used to be. And I understand that, and I understand why. I truly do. And in fact, it's better, but it's not easy.
That's one of the reasons we're seeing the popularity in devices like the Android and the iPad, that you go to a store, you hit a button, and there's an app.
Yep.
You don't have to know how to download it, decompress it, install it, approve it. You know, you're letting someone else handle all that for you.
Right. We computer geeks have spent a very long time digging deeply into our systems and understanding the mysteries of it all. So when somebody says, I can't do this, we think, well, that's because you're a moron. It's so easy. But it's only easy for us. For the average person, what they want to do push a button and get their email. Push a button and go to the web.
They don't want to have
to
think.
And the iPad and the Android tablets and the Chrome OS give you that functionality. It's what the average person wants. They want a tool to do their job, or you know, to have fun or whatever it is. They don't want to be a car mechanic. They want to get in the car, turn the key, and go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely get that. And the iPads, the Android tablets, Chrome OS, things like that, a lot of the skins that you can put on Linux do very much that. They make it ridiculously easy for you.
Yep. In fact, Apple's even adding a Mac app store so that desktop computers can easily purchase apps and not have to worry about boxes and CDs and license codes. And it's one of the interesting restrictions in the app store is you cannot require a license code. And I can see some of the reason for that, because we hear it all the time. Someone wants to reinstall the Word that they lost, and, well, you need the disk, and you need the license code.
Right.
I don't have any of that. Then you got to buy another copy.
Yep.
That's one thing I got to admit, excuse me, with the latest updates to the iTunes. Moving songs and everything else from my desktop to the iTunes folders on my iTouch has gotten a lot easier. Before, it was a pain in the butt.
Yeah. There have been things that were very, very clumsy to do on iTunes.
Now it's like, oh, I download this, drag it over, I've got it.
Yep. All right. Microsoft is set to deliver a record 17 security updates next week to patch 40 vulnerabilities in Windows, Internet Explorer, Office, SharePoint, and Exchange. Among the 40 patches will be two that address a pair of bugs that hackers have already exploited. I really was not expecting 17, said Andrew Storms, Director of Security Operations at N-Circle Security. I expected 10 at the most. The 17 updates, Microsoft calls them bulletins, are a record, beating the count from October 2010 by one. The total bulletin count for the year, 106, was also a record, as was the number of vulnerabilities patched in those updates, 266. Microsoft defended the blistering bug patching pace of 2010. This is partly due to vulnerability reports in Microsoft products increasing slightly, and to the fact that Microsoft supports products for up to 10 years, said Mike Reavy, the director of Microsoft Security Response Center. Older products meeting newer attack methods, coupled with overall growth in the vulnerability marketplace, result in more vulnerability reports. But it was December's big number that caught Storm's eye. The sheer number is quite surprising for December. In the past 3 years, Microsoft has issued no more than 9 updates in December. And while Microsoft doesn't necessarily take its cues from the rest of the world, the fact is many organizations won't patch a lot of these until after the first of the year. Not only will enterprise IT staffs be shorthanded this month, what with holidays and vacation time, but they will be unlikely to risk problems that could crop up in patching during such an important time of the year for their business. In this case, there might be less risk involved by doing nothing. Many firms forbid patching the last 2 months of the year to ensure their hardware continues to operate. Two of the 17 updates were tagged with Microsoft's critical label, the highest threat ranking in its 4-step scoring system. Another 14 were marked important, which is the second highest rating, while the remaining update was labeled moderate. Our question to you, were you surprised by the larger number of patches? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like our friend Scott did from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
That's what I like to hear. What can we do to make you even happier than you are now?
Well, I just listened an hour ago to an NPR program called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell.
Yeah, great program.
And Steve Wozniak was a guest on there.
Ah, I can't believe I missed it.
And Steve says he has 6 cell phones in his pocket, 3 iPhones, 2 Droids, and something else.
Yeah, one of each, like any true geek.
That's very funny. At least he's not out of signal no matter where he goes.
Yeah. That's exactly right. He tells us some to the other ones and stuff like that.
That's so very funny.
I just thought I'd make that little statement. That's all.
That's great, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's very, very funny.
And likely, I'm looking at NPR's website, likely that's going to be available as a podcast, like a lot of their stores.
It will be later on.
The NPR,
usually later on in the day, but this one might not hit till Monday.
Yeah, the NPR iPad app is really, really good
for
finding all those shows, too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, give us a call if you carry 6 cell phones or perhaps even just one. 585-966-JAZZ.
I carry one and mine likes to call everybody else.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. 1-5. Scott is a friend of the show and a good friend in Second Life. And
apparently,
so we're
it is up already.
Really?
There's a listen button.
Oh, but there's not a download button yet. That's very funny.
Does that do a stream or is that it pops open a new player?
Yeah.
See what does a stream. Oh, it's a Flash stream.
Yeah, it is. I'm getting tired of Flash. I don't care what anybody says. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I'm stinking rat bag tired of it. Sorry that.
Yeah.
Was that clear enough?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of Flash, going back to an earlier story, a Danish newspaper has had their app rejected by the Apple App Store because similar to the UK paper, The Sun, they have their Page 9 girl that they've been publishing
topless
photos of.
It's like the Page 3 girl
I think it's The Sun. Yeah. So, yeah, they have their Page 9 girl that they've been doing for 40 years. The Danes are very upset that Apple is censoring them. So they're complaining to the European Commission about Apple's censorship. And so one of the comments later in the story was, I'm really sick of America pushing their morals on the rest of the country. And so someone commented back, I'm really sick of Europe, you know, not letting us have our own morals.
All right, we're going back to the phone. Our next caller is Fritz from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Fritz. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Peachy.
Listen, this is my my Christmas tip for the year.
There you go.
I bought my wife a new printer. I got it at Big Lots. She just needed a printer and copier, and it scans. It's a Canon. I got it for $40. And being a good tech person, I priced out the replacement ink cartridges for it. And I'll throw this one down the middle. Guess how much the ink cartridges cost?
$40.
$50.
$50.
Yeah.
Just about $50.
Yep.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, I should have bought two printers and then taken the cartridges out of the second one and then put the other one up for sale on Craigslist. It's brand new without cartridges.
I know people that when they run out of ink, they just buy a new printer.
Because
it's almost cheaper.
Well, the big difference is that the cartridges that come with the printer hold less ink.
Yeah, quite often.
You're right, because I got an offer of where I could get, a second set of cartridges, and the black cartridge went out in no time at all. You know, the original cartridge that came in the printer.
Yeah, yeah. If you look in the fine print, it talks about a starter cartridge.
Yeah, they're starter cartridges.
It's a starter, okay. You know, but it didn't go much beyond that.
Yep. Yeah. This has been an issue for years. We kind of call it the BIC analogy. You know, they give you the printer for free because you know you're gonna waste a lot of money. Well, yeah.
Give away the razors,
ink.
Sell the blades. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. We've had customers that call us that just want a cheap black and white printer, and you can't find one. They're all color inkjet.
Yep. Yep.
So one of the solutions is you go to a laser printer for black and white, and you can find those for $100, $150. And then your toner costs are much lower at a unit price. You know, you may pay $60, $70 for a toner cartridge, but it's going to last 3,000 or 4,000 pages.
Right.
And it used to be you could find a black only inkjet printer, but now it's almost impossible.
Can.
And even if you buy a color printer and only use black, the color ink gets used up too.
Right, and it's like what was it? It used to be anyway, like a dollar a page for inkjet and 10 cents a page for laser.
Yeah.
Think you got a break coming?
There you go, Wes. We're gonna take it too. Thanks Fritz.
Fellas.
We're gonna take a break. Fritz told us to. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Zach did from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Zach. What's your question?
I have a question related to streaming over a smartphone. I have a Droid 2, and I don't get sometimes I lose the 90.1 signal when I'm in the car, and I'm wondering, is there any app that would allow me to stream your radio show, you know, through my Droid?
Yes, actually, there are a couple.
Okay.
But we can't tell you about them since we just got fired. So
I'm sorry.
We're going to be shutting down now.
I'm cleaning out my desk. Yeah. But I got to find my desk. He didn't tell me where the desk was.
I don't know where my desk is. How can I clean it out?
You should be able to just use the web browser. It's a standard MP3 stream.
Okay.
Right. You can do that. That is certainly a great way to do it. But there is an app, and I'm trying to find it quickly while we chat. Somebody tap dance for a minute while I look up the name of that app.
And similar on the iPhone, being able to use the MP3 stream from the website.
Zia Live, that's it. Zia Live, sorry.
How do you spell that?
XIIA Live. They have a light version and a regular version. And what that lets you do is listen to stations that are either already preset or put your own in. And, of course, if you go to the Jazz 90.1 website and click on Listen Live, you'll know where that stream is coming from.
All right, because I tried that once, and it didn't work. Maybe I just wasn't persistent enough. But I'll certainly try that software or try using the web browser again.
Yeah, either one should work. I really like Zia Live. It seems to be pretty nifty. The early version had some problems, but the later version is excellent. I've got Jazz 90.1 in my Zia Live Lite, and it has a ridiculous number of play count on it. So, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. There's a top hits, genre stuff. There's a favorites button, so, of course, I added it to the favorites button. Pretty nifty stuff. Zia Live Lite, which is, you know, you get ads, but of course you're not really looking at the phone anyway, so I suppose.
No.
So it's XIAA Live Light.
Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Enjoy us on the go.
Formerly Droid Live,
but they weren't allowed to use the word droid because that's patented by George Lucas.
Yep. And the commercial version is only $4.
Right. And as I tell people all the time, try out the free version. And if you like it, pay the $4. These folks are, you know, that encourages them to go out and continue to make the product.
Well, that's true with a lot of the apps for, you know, your iTouch or your iPhone. Quite often they'll have a light version. So you can try it out for free. And then if you really like it, like you say, you can then get the full-blown version, which usually has a few more features than that to it. But like you say, it's encouraging these folks that all of a sudden, here's the other thing that gets you into. You know, if you go ahead and pay for the real app, and then maybe you'd like it to also do this or do that. It's like going back to the old days. If you support the person and then tell them other features, it inspires them to do that much more with it and keeps things, you know, going. Instead of just sucking it off like a leech.
Very much like becoming a member of member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Very good segue.
We listen to all our listeners, but, you know, it's the Animal Farm thing. Everybody's equal, but some are more equal than others. And certainly we bend an ear just a little closer. And I don't care if anybody doesn't like that. Become a member, then you're in the elite.
And they can also, by going to the webpage, find out
something special.
Something very special.
Possibly for next weekend?
Definitely. And all I can tell you, too, is if you folks have been listening to us, you know, we've been on the air now for over 21 years. And it's become more or less a routine because we will not be on Christmas Day nor New Year's Day. So, that means there's one more show left.
Right.
Which means that's got to be, the Rumble Show.
That's the Rumble Show. And you really, you know, we're available here on the air every Saturday. We're in Second Life every Friday night. We have the soundbites.org website. We've got the Soundbites fan page on Facebook. There's a Soundbites Twitter feed, and there's Jazz 90.1's website at jazz901.org. If you don't know what's going on next Saturday, you're truly not paying attention. So you really need to pay attention to what's going on make your plans accordingly. Our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan.
Gentlemen, welcome to you. Hey, I've got a question. I use I have an email account at a website, so it doesn't come into a program such as Outlook Express or anything like that. I actually log into a website. They've actually changed their version, and now almost every email that I get in my mailbox that has, let's say, for example, pictures, I get a security warning. It says, do you want to view only the web page content that was delivered securely? This web page contains content that will not be delivered using a secure HTTPS connection, which could compromise the security of the entire web page. I usually say no, and then the email loads properly. If I say yes, I get a lot of empty boxes with a little red square. Now, what's interesting is that I also have Firefox as my one of my browsers. This does not occur in Firefox, but it does occur in Internet Explorer. So the question is, yeah, I can always use Firefox, but technically now I'm trying to tweak it. What is the problem on my computer, or is the problem with them?
Well, it depends.
Oh, by the way, I've also tried this at my work computer, and I get the same results using Internet Explorer. That's the only web browser we can we have on our work computers.
Yeah, it's a security precaution. You're at a secure website, and it wants to send information to you unsecurely. There should be a box to don't warn you again.
Yeah, is this IE8?
Yes.
Yeah, there is a security warning. Where is that? Hold on a second. You can disable it.
If I go to
Mixed Content, actually.
All right, so if I go to Internet Options, Content?
Tools, Internet Options, Security. Make sure the Internet Zone is selected. Click Custom Level.
Hang on one second. Internet Custom Level, yeah.
Right. Scroll down the list of options and set Display Mixed Content setting. Change it from Prompt to Enable.
Allow scriptlets disabled prompt?
No, display mixed content.
Display mixed content.
Change it from prompt to enable.
Disable mixed. Disable. I'm scrolling down. I just don't see it yet.
It'll be there. The other thing is, of course, that's not necessarily a good idea. So those of you who might also be listening in and rushing to do this frantically, it is not a good idea.
Because the bad websites can sneak in stuff that way as well.
Well,
the reason you're going
to
a secure
that, knowing that there is a backside of it, maybe it's best just to use. You know, when I go to that email account, I'll just use Firefox where the issue is not there.
Well, that's...
you've already told Firefox not to warn you about mixed content, which is bad.
Right.
Ah, okay.
Right, and the reason that it's bad is because a lot of viruses are coming in through what look like just plain old pictures nowadays. In addition, those pictures can be used to track you.
Okay.
So by embedding a picture, and it could be a one pixel white, one white pixel, so you don't even see it there. But it's technically a picture, and so it downloads when you view the mail, and the other end knows that you read that mail.
Interesting.
And then they know they've got a live human being on the other end of the line if they want to sell that address.
Well, that's what's interesting, because the email address that I have with this website, well, the email address is basically for all my, if you want to call it, the junk mail, the stores, and when they want, you know, for a
rebate or
something to that effect.
There you are. I would actually set it to never.
Never? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if this is not stuff from friends.
No, this is basically solicitations like you would get, Staples even, Staples.com.
Right, and do you really need to look at those pictures?
I don't know, I guess.
I'm serious. That's something you have to ask yourself.
I have this argument with my wife a lot. She likes getting junk email. She likes responding
to junk
email.
No, I get that, but that's the choice that Bodan has to make.
Yeah.
If you like looking at this stuff, and I'm just talking about pictures of staplers, okay? I'm not getting excited here.
Right.
But if you like looking at that stuff and you want to spend the time and effort downloading it and making it show up on your computer, then set it to enable.
Okay.
Otherwise, set it to never, and then all you ever see is the text, and then who cares?
Yeah. Hey, the other question is, gentlemen, last Tuesday in San Francisco, Google Chrome presented their new notebook, which unfortunately is not going to be out for another 6 months. It's called
right.
CR48. Have you guys heard about it?
Yeah, and we actually talked about it at the top of the show. Where were you?
I was doing shopping. I was spending money.
Oh, good for you.
Stimulating the economy.
Send some our way. Yeah, it really looks like a pretty nifty toy. The proof is in the pudding. Nobody's actually seen it yet, right? Nobody's actually.
Right.
I've seen it. I just haven't held it in my hands and played with it and spent 10 hours.
I think they should give us three of them to play with.
I think we can go to their website and request them.
Yeah. Well, again, what I thought was it's going to have a Chrome operating system already installed on that machine. It's supposed to be the fastest browser out there,
yep.
And it's supposed to have an 8-hour battery.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then if you have that, we're looking at some stuff from our boss. And if he can do what he just threatened to do, then there's some legal shenanigans going on.
Okay.
Let's get back to you. The Chrome notebook looks really nifty. The basic idea is everything is in the cloud because it's Google.
Uh-huh.
Right? And Google, you know, you browse your search engine is Google, your word processor is Google Docs, you know, your office suite is Google Docs, your picture stuff is Picasa. So it all goes through that stuff. And you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of astonishing applications available through Google,
uh-huh.
and all the really better ones will be available immediately in the Chrome notebook, and you'll be able to add more as you go along.
I like one of their slogans for the pilot program. The Chrome OS is for people who live on the web. It runs web-based programs, not legacy PC software.
Right, right, right. And as we said earlier, people complain. They say, "Well, what if I'm not near a computer?" And I say to them, really? Seriously? How much computing do you ever actually do somewhere where you're not near any sort of connection?
Uh-huh.
Then tether it with your Droid or do it right on the Droid.
Yeah, then you put a 3G card in it.
Right.
Okay. So you guys, all right. I'm surprised that they didn't try to push it out for the Christmas market because, they're going to have to...
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that myself.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait and... consider buying that in 6 months. I was actually looking to buy a laptop, and I figured I'd probably get a good deal right around the holidays then, or right in January after the holidays. But, why rush?
Exactly right.
Right.
At least check it out.
I'll see you next Saturday.
Yes, you will. Thanks.
Come on down.
Bye. See ya.
And what he is talking about, folks, for you folks that don't know, you got to go to help to turn that off. Trying to do three things here at once.
Only three, you lazy bugger.
I know. What can I say?
You should check out the jazz901.org website because there's fascinating information on there. You may have to scroll down a little bit. Yeah, you got your wrist slapped, didn't you?
No. He's trying to hit me back with different comebacks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I slapped him right back.
There
and
you
he's,
go.
I think I got the last dig in.
You need to head out to the jazz901.org website and check out what's there. You might have to scroll down a little bit to see us, but there's a fascinating announcement on there, and it could change some of your plans. So,
and like I say, if you folks, and for the folks that do know of us, like I say, each year I do my famous rum balls, and I take great pride in these things. I mean, I make them up every year, and a number of folks have sampled them. And I have not found a one person yet that, hasn't liked them. So who knows? If you read a little further, I can say that I will have them with me next Saturday.
Excellent.
So you got to go to the webpage
and find out what
more.
That means.
Yes. We're kind of throwing a little riddle here at you. And, kind of in the holiday spirit, get you out, get you shopping and out and about, which we know you're going to be doing anyways. So
exactly right.
Check out the webpage.
But it may put a slight change in your plans.
And while I'm at it right now, since I do have another minute before we got to take a break here, is I'm going to throw in another shameless plug.
Uh-oh.
And what I'm throwing in there for is Rob has gone insane. We were just talking about it.
That's hardly news.
Yeah. Well, when you got Sax older than him. But he's literally gone into the library and dug out all these great CDs. And from now until the 19th, you can go to the webpage, and if you send us, You know, send us an email with your name, address, phone number, and why you think you should get in and be the winner of this great CD package of jazz. And like I said, he has dug out some stuff, folks. It is wonderful. But if you don't have email and say, you know, well, you're not a high-tech person, that's okay. We got you covered there, too. If you go to the webpage, you can fill out a postcard, again, with your name, address, and phone number, and why you should get it, and mail it to the station. Because on Christmas Eve, Rob is actually going to be here on the station and draw, I believe at 9 o'clock, he is going to draw the winner of this wonderful CD package, a stocking full of CDs of great jazz. And, you know, meanwhile, you're going to be able to sit back and have a lot of great fun just listening to it. So if you want to get in on that, again, go to www.jazz901.org and check it out, because I think you will not be disappointed at all.
Not even a little bit. All right. There we go. You have somehow, and I don't know how you do this, but you keep managing to do it, you've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. Well, buck up, because you're going to get to waste another hour. We will be back after just a few minutes with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Yeah, take that couple of minutes to go to jazz901.org and look stuff up. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We have all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. On Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Microsoft has issued an Office for Mac 2008 security update that patches 4 vulnerabilities the company had disclosed but not addressed last month. Office for Mac 2, doesn't he understand we're doing a radio show and he should leave us alone?
No, he's the boss.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Office for Mac 2004, which harbors the same 4 flaws, remains unpatched, however. I hope you're paying attention to that. If you have Office for Mac 2008, there's a security update for 4 vulnerabilities. If you have Office for Mac 2004, you're on your own and the heck with you. So if you're still using Office for Mac 2004, please upgrade immediately. On November 9th, Microsoft released an update for Office for Mac 2011, which shipped just 2 weeks earlier. The patched 4 bugs, all rated important, the second highest threat level in the company's 4-step scoring system. At the same time, Microsoft labeled each of the 4 with the phrase remote code execution, indicating they could be used by attackers to infect a Mac with malware. But it did not update Office for Mac 2008 or 2004 at the same time. In reply to questions last month, Microsoft's Jerry Bryant said that the updates for Mac Office 2004 and 2008 weren't ready. You know, it's very tough when you're a small company and you don't have a lot of programmers. But the company chose to fix issues that were finished, particularly those for the more popular Office suites for Windows. Normally, we release updates for all affected products at the same time. But in cases where the vast majority of our customers are at potential risk and we can provide protections, we may decide to release updates for those products, if ready, ahead of products where the risk is very low. Wednesday's 333 megabyte update to Office for Mac 2008 also includes some stability improvements to Entourage, the email client included with that version of the suite. Our question to you, are you fully patched up on Office for the Mac? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
And a lot of people are stuck.
There's your answer to our limo.
Yeah.
A lot of people with the older Office.
He's so tight, he squeaks.
Yeah.
A lot of Mac users with the older 2004 are stuck in that quandary again, is that they can't buy 2011 because it requires more hardware or a newer OS than they have.
Might be time to move to Neo Office.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if Microsoft is leaving you in the lurch completely unpatched, it might be time to move on. Neo Office is the Macintosh. It meets the Macintosh look. It's openoffice.org, but it meets the Mac look. And so if, again, for 99% of the people out there, NeoOffice is more than you need for word processing, for spreadsheets, for PowerPoint-like presentation stuff, and for databases. So you don't need to buy Office. And if you cannot use Office 2008 or 2011.
You can't buy 2008 anymore.
Well, right. But if you can't use them, then you can't buy 2011 because it's not going to work for you. Then you really need to look at something like NeoOffice, which is more secure than Microsoft Office for the Mac 2004. Just the truth.
Yeah. So you're not supposed to keep your computers more than 2 years.
Yeah, well, you know what? When you're a multi-billionaire in either camp, you can do that.
But the thing
I think I need to change my MacBook for a MacBook Air today.
But the thing of it is, though, is, a lot of the features that they throw into some of these other Office products, you know, again, I'm getting to where, you know, I'd say half the folks don't use half the features.
Yeah, but they have to add new features to make
some reason to upgrade.
And they keep,
folks keep
right,
feeling
because
compelled.
People buy their stuff by checklist.
Yeah, they got to keep buying, you know, get the upgrade. OpenOffice does just as good.
OpenOffice does the upgrades for free. And they never obsolete themselves. You get the new version, and it's just a download and an install. It's that easy. I love free software. I love the idea behind it. LibreOffice, LIBRE Office, is a fork of OpenOffice. OpenOffice is now owned by Sun, and people are worried, so they've forked it. Which is the nice thing about free software. So you don't have to be beholden to whoever's got whatever it is. If it's open source, they can do what they want with it.
OpenOffice requires an Intel Mac. So if you're running a six-year-old computer.
What about NeoOffice?
Let's try NeoOffice, yeah. And that's what we're seeing as the biggest thing in the Mac world. Is in 2006, Apple shifted from the IBM PowerPC into the Intel processor. And a lot of software we're seeing now, you know, 4 years later, requires Intel. And if you haven't upgraded to Intel, you're out of luck most of the time buying new software.
Right. And for those who still have the old machines, maybe you can put a version of Linux on it, but it's no longer than fully a Mac.
Right.
All right.
Wait a minute. Before we go to our next caller, I just got to put out a plea. I did this a while back. Folks, when you call, do me a favor.
Just because he whispers doesn't mean
you
have to.
See, here's the situation. If you folks get on the web, you'll see our layout. Because, you know, we have the camera going, and you can see us actually doing the show live.
Through the Ustream stream.
Right.
Stream.
So when you folks call in, I have to whisper. Because right next to me, literally, is the phone, and Nick and Steve are trying to talk, and they kind of keep things moving while I sit there and try to get you folks onto the phone, answer, you know, get your name, where you're calling from, and then transfer you over into the system. It's okay. You can talk up. It doesn't get over the phone. So, you know, please, you don't have to whisper. It's not a library. Speak up, please.
Also, Dave is no longer 20. And his ears don't pick up those whispers like they used to 40 years ago.
Not even close.
Yeah. So our next caller is Jim from Churchville, who will be speaking up in his stentorian tones. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. I know just enough about these computers to be dangerous, but there's a lot I can't figure out. I have Outlook 2003 on an XP machine, and I have Outlook 2003 on a Windows 7 laptop. Is there a way I can move my email from one machine to the other?
Not easily.
That's what I was afraid of.
Well, you should be able to export and import.
One message at a time.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, because I can send it to myself under another name and then send it to the other machine, too. I didn't want to have to do it one at a time. But if that's life, that's life. One thing about you guys mentioned, too, about updating. I get updates from Microsoft to update patches for Outlook 2007.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have 2007. Office 2007. I don't have 2007, but I do have 2003. Should I update the 2007 update to 2003?
I wouldn't.
Can I ignore it?
I wouldn't. If it's an up, I don't even know why you would be getting an update to 2007. Yeah,
2010 is the current version for Windows.
Well, no, but I mean, if you don't have 2007 on your machine, why would you get an update for it?
Maybe it's coming from Microsoft. It's coming in all the updates, and I have to uncheck it every time I get it. It just comes down an update to Office 2007. And I didn't think that if I didn't have 2007, that it might screw something up.
You know what you can do? There's a personal folders backup tool.
Okay.
Yeah, here we are. I'm finding.
The personal folders backup tool lets you copy your Outlook backup files to a CD, a DVD, thumb drive, whatever.
Okay.
Right? And if you do that, then you should be able to import them on the other machine.
Okay.
So
there's one. You mean there's one on the web, or there's one in my software? Or?
No, it's in Outlook.
Oh, okay.
Under File and Folder Tasks. Well, you can do that. Well, there are a couple of ways to do it. How do you do that right in Outlook? I don't have Outlook in front of me, unfortunately, so I can't.
I can screw around with it. I probably can't do any damage, can I? You don't want to answer that question.
See, I found an instruction at Microsoft, and they're telling you to go into the registry.
Oh, no, I don't want to.
That's
what
they always do.
Well, because one of the problems with Outlook is it creates a folder to store your stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that folder is a random name of random letters and numbers.
Right.
So you cannot just move it to another computer because the registry is looking for that random series of letters and numbers.
Okay. I'll do it the hard way.
What you can do is you can sit there and let it go ahead and generate that folder, but then what you'd have to do is if you're trying to copy it from one machine to the other, what you would have to do is go within that random number folder, copy the contents of that folder, say to a flash drive, then you go over to the other machine, you've got to find that random number folder where that file folder is, and replace it.
Well, the easiest
you export
way to
your PST on one computer,
right.
mm-hmm. and then you can import that PST on another computer.
Yep. Right. What you do is, let's say in the old machine, you go to File, Import, Export, and Export to a File.
Mm-hmm.
Then it wants you to pick a folder, so you do it by folder. The easiest way to do this, of course, is to make a temporary folder, put all your other folders in it, right?
Well, how many mail folders do you have? Do you keep everything in the inbox, or do you make multiple folders?
I have multiple names that I use for my email, like helpful stuff.
I understand, but now we're getting into details that we can't possibly answer over the phone.
Yeah, okay.
But basically the way it works is for each folder, or you can group a bunch of folders inside another folder, you go into File, Import, Export, Export to a File, select the folder, and export it. Then you go reverse that. Go to File, Import, Export, Import a File, and import it.
Okay.
That's basically the way you do it. Now, as to multiple names and everything else, you're kind of on your own for that because we can't possibly fix that over the phone.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just looking for things to try. What I've tried to figure out, I can't figure out yet, so I'll try that.
Give that a try. Let us know how it works.
Okay.
One of the other things you could do is inside of each computer, set Outlook to not delete the mail from the server, and then you'll get the same mail received in on both computers.
Right.
And so that may alleviate, well, it won't help the old mail, but it would help in the future that you'll get the same mail on both computers. And at virtually every mail program has that option somewhere. Sometimes it says remove from server and you have to uncheck it. And sometimes it says leave on server and you have to check it.
Right.
But somewhere in the settings, somewhere is a section to leave the mail on the server. Because normally when your mail program downloads email from your server, you know, your Roadrunner, Frontier, you know, Gmail, whatever, it deletes the mail from that server once
it gets
it on your computer.
And that's understandable because they don't want there's very few vendors that want you to be leaving all that mail up on their disks, just filling up space.
So you can tell your mail program to leave it on the server, which lets you use another computer and download that same mail. And some of the newer mail programs will also have an option to automatically delete the mail from the server after a week or after a month. Because what will happen is your mail server will start filling up, and then you can't receive any more mail because the server is full. We get those questions.
Even on a service like Gmail where you get 7 gigs of disk space, you still only get 7 gigs of disk space. And if you fill it up, you stop getting mail.
It used to be really bad at Roadrunner because you only got like 5 megs of mail space.
Right.
And so if you didn't check your mail for a week, it could fill up and you couldn't get any more mail.
Right.
And we would get questions where people, you get an email from your provider saying your mailbox is full, and they would delete mail on their own computer, not realizing it means it's the mailbox at the server you have to edit.
Right. Assuming you got that email.
Well, that email it will send
to
you.
Well, they'll send that through,
It won't let anybody else's email. And the people who try to send you an email will bounce back, and they'll get an error message that they couldn't send your mail.
Right, and then you start getting panicked phone calls. Are you okay? Yeah.
Now that most of the providers will give you a couple hundred megs, it takes longer to fill up.
Right, it's still not quite Google size, but it works. One of the things I really like about Thunderbird is that I can actually manage my Google Mail right in Thunderbird. So that's kind of nice, actually. But you all know I'm a fan of most things Google, and so I'm pretty impressed by the stuff that they're doing. It's pretty neat stuff. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this Google Chrome notebook. It sounds like it's going to be highly nifty. We'll see when we see it. Of course, you know, who knows, but it certainly sounds like a pretty cool toy. Are we...
One of their questions when you're filling out your test drive option is if you take notes during a meeting, how do you take your notes? And the questions are, I write them down, I type them in online program, I type them on my computer, I carve them onto stone tablets.
Exactly. I tend to take notes nowadays for most meetings. I have a tablet PC, so the top swivels.
Yeah.
And I can actually, I've got an app that I can actually just simply write on. So I still tend to write my notes, but I'm writing them on the computer now. And then I can share them with everybody that way. But when I do type, I just tend to type them into Google Docs and then share them with everybody. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Tom from Walkett, New York on the line. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Well, it's a minor annoyance, but it drives me crazy. I use Firefox. And I used to be able to type in the name of the website and not hit .com, and it would go to it. And now it just goes to Yahoo Search.
The search page, yes. Your internet provider is trying to do something nice for you and make some money. all of the local providers in Rochester that we know of have done this, and we're expecting it's common in other cities as well. They are, in essence, violating the rules of the internet. Technically, if you just type in, Apple, you should get a DNS error that there's no such thing as Apple. Browsers over the years have gotten handy for you. They'll fill in the www and the .com for you.
Right. If they get that error back,
yeah,
they will try then .com and then www.com. So really, you just need to type in Apple and wait.
Right. So what has happened is that the internet providers have sensed a revenue stream. Instead of letting your browser fill in the .com, they intercept that error message and send you to a search page so they get paid. On most of those search pages, there will be a little button somewhere, usually near the top, about why am I here or set your preferences, where you can turn that feature off so that it goes back to working the way it used to. Some providers don't allow you to turn that feature off, and you're kind of stuck with it. So you have to start remembering
and
to type
the .com again. And no
provider
makes that button really visible.
Yeah.
I have Verizon DSL, and it goes to a Yahoo page.
Right, so Verizon has contracted with Yahoo for returning search results.
Well, but sometimes if you're on Verizon's page, they have their own Verizon search. So.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
I'll look for that opt-out or whatever it is.
Yeah, it may say something about opt-out, or it may say something about search preferences or redirect preferences, something like that.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All right, thank you.
Sorry, wish there were an easy way to fix that, but it's not you and it's not the internet that's doing it. So
yeah, it's your provider.
Your provider, and it really is a nice feature that they've given you. There are a lot of people who type addresses in wrong all day long, and the ability to immediately bring up a search page which with some probable choices, many of which are often the one you want is in there, is really a nice feature. I can't fault the providers for doing that. It really is a good idea.
I like Google spell check when you're doing a Google search. Did you mean? Right. Well, yes, I did. Thank you.
Yes, I did. So, yeah, I really, it's a service, and it's a good service. You know, yeah, they're making a buck off it, but it's a good service. Unfortunately, for those of us who've been on the web forever, having that little shortcut feature, although you wait longer that way, you also wait longer if at the end of .com, unless you're going to an actual page, if you put a slash after .com, for example, if you go to soundbites.org or soundbites.org/, you actually get there a little bit faster with the slash. It's just the way DNS works. And so if you're, if A, you're impatient enough that a few milliseconds bothers you, and B, you actually notice those few milliseconds, trust me, you don't, then you definitely have the ability to put that slash in and get there just that little bit faster.
There was a Steve Gibson released his DNS benchmarking tool this week, a couple weeks ago actually now, and the faster your computer can look up the DNS request, the faster your web browsing experience is. And he's got a test of 5,000 DNS servers to see which one is the fastest. And that's a geeky thing that that we like to do sometimes. Who's got the fastest DNS to get the fastest web search? So if I can save a millisecond
a day. A lot of people add the Google DNS,
yep.
8888 or whatever the number is. Is this Lisa or Liza?
Lisa.
Welcome.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to.
Our next caller is Lisa from Webster. Welcome, Lisa. What's your question?
Thank you very much. I have an out-of-state disabled family member learning the iPad and receiving email on Ymail. I've remotely and manually added some email addresses on her account through my PC. When visiting the family member recently, I noticed through her iPad that the email addresses I added on her Ymail account were not in her list of contacts through her iPad. Also, some addresses added directly on her iPad are not listed through a PC or laptop. What's going on?
That's the way it works. When you put an address into one program, it stays in that one program.
But if you're on the Ymail site, why won't it just stay there?
You were on the Ymail site, and you were in her...
her account.
Account.
And so on her iPad, she goes to the Ymail website?
Yes.
And she's not using the iPad address book?
Correct.
Then it should stay.
Yeah, it should stay. So you're absolutely certain that she's not using...
Yes, because I was there and did it through
right,
Ymail.
Right. I wish I had an easy answer for you.
So I know Google has an import-export feature where you can update address books across platforms.
Yeah.
But I don't know Ymail enough.
Okay. I was wondering if it was Ymail, some sort of issue with them.
It sounds like it is, yeah. If you're logging into Ymail account, creating an address, and it doesn't stay when you log back in again. There's a question. When you log back in on your computer, is the address there?
The ones that I have entered from the computer are there, yes.
Make sure there's not a checkbox somewhere that says save on local computer. You want to save it on the web account.
Okay, I haven't seen anything like that, but I'll look again.
Yeah, I'm afraid that what it sounds like is that either you added them to your local machine only. No, that's what it sounds like. There's no either there. It sounds like you added them to your local machine. So you want to be careful of that. We see that a lot. There are hidden choices that most people never run into because you only got one machine, right?
Right, but it can't be that because I also looked at it on another machine, a laptop, and the ones that I had entered through my computer were there. So.
And she's using the exact same username and password to log in as
yes.
you were.
And the only difference is that she's on an iPad.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's not using an app. She's using Safari.
She's using Safari.
I have no answer for
it
you.
It shouldn't
Lisa.
Save it as a cookie on your local computer. It should
no,
save
it, really
it on
shouldn't.
Their server.
Well, and she's already verified that other people have it. So yeah. The only odd piece of that is the iPad.
Okay.
That's so
you
weird.
You could try a different browser on the iPad.
I thought
to
it was
see.
Weird, too.
I don't know what to say at this moment.
Yeah.
Well, try a different browser on the iPad and see if it shows up there. That would
okay.
point to
it's
whether
gonna
it's going to
take me a long time to get back there again, but...
Road
yeah,
trip.
I am sorry. I understand.
Thanks
well,
anyway, you
well,
guys.
Wait a minute, Lisa. Is it warmer there?
No.
Oh, I was just saying, you know... sorry.
It's colder than here?
Try.
Holy moly.
Where is it? Up in Michigan?
You're close. Wisconsin.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, it is colder in Wisconsin.
And what's the address of Ymail? Is it Ymail or WHYmail?
It's Yahoo Mail.
It's through Yahoo, but it's ymail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
I was hoping, you know, we could sit there and give you good reasons, you know, to if it was a warmer climate, you know, like Phoenix or I don't want to say down in Florida because they're freezing their butts off right now. But maybe, you know, California, San Diego and that type of stuff. That'd be cool.
Because the iPad has a specific setup for Yahoo Mail.
Oh, well.
Well, that's see, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. But we did it through Safari, so I don't know. I don't know.
Let us know if you find out anything.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
We would appreciate it.
All right.
You take it easy.
I feel bad now.
Yeah.
Particularly, she's doing something for a family member and all that, and I just, I'm confused now.
Oh, here, I did a Google search for Ymail contacts, and did you mean Gmail contacts? Why, no, I did not.
That's funny. It is one of the things that I do like about the whole Google thing, but we're not going to worry about that right now.
It looks like Ymail is a mobile-optimized version of Yahoo Mail.
So it has to be an app on...
No, it's a web app.
Oh, it's a web app. Okay. All right. But we're going to go... are we? We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Walworth, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I had called last week. I had a Mac Mini with Tiger, and I couldn't see my movies, pictures, iTunes, anything on the computer. And we had talked, and you thought it might be something to do with my preferences or my username. I went back and looked, and there's only one user. It's me. And now when I restart the Mac, I have to log in. Didn't have to do that before. So I've checked the forums on Apple and spent some time looking and trying to see if there's any way. All the files are there. I can see them in folders. All my iTunes songs and everything, they're there. And I didn't try going into iTunes Advanced and changing the folder location and trying to import it. But nothing's worked so far. Do you have any other ideas I may try?
Well, requiring a password to log in is a preference in your system account.
Mm-hmm.
What can happen is if you change your admin preference, then the saved preference for auto login doesn't match anymore, so it stops and asks you to manually log in. So if your admin password has changed, it may be something in the keychain password store, but iTunes doesn't use the keychain password store.
Yeah, the password
only for iTunes accounts.
I use the same password. When I install a program, it asks for the password. Yeah. So the password is the same. I just have to log in. The desktop background is reverted to the default. I used to have a background screen, so everything's like reverted to default.
Yeah, it sounds like your preferences files got deleted and recreated.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then how does he get back that stuff? Is there, because I know that under, for example, Windows, I can right-click on a folder and take ownership of it if I'm an administrator.
Yeah, there's the repair permissions tool that's supposed to do that.
Is that permissions tool under utilities or somewhere on my...
Yeah, it's in the disk utility.
Okay. Because I do a backup by copying things over, but... there's nothing, you know, all my files and music and everything is there, but nothing that I could see that would be a preference file that I could copy back in.
There's preference files all over the place. User library preferences is where it stores them all.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a permission error, you could try getting permissions on the iTunes folder and see if what it says, who owns that folder and what permission you have for it. Because if the permissions have been messed up and you don't have permission to see that folder, then when you open iTunes, it will be empty because you don't have permission to see the folder.
Okay. I have another iMac. I was wondering if I could reinstall on the other iMac and then use this one to pull in all my, you know, when it asks you for on the install.
Yeah, you could run the migration assistant on other computer and migrate all the files in.
Yeah.
But if the permissions aren't correct, that may not work either. Yeah, try the permission repair. Manually look at the permissions on the iTunes folder.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, you may have to bring it into a shop to have someone physically take a look at it.
Well, there's only one shop that I would bring it into. So.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Sure. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, a lot of times we see that happen when people accidentally move a folder that shouldn't be moved, and then the system is looking for it where it isn't anymore, and it makes a new empty one. But if he can still see the files where they're supposed to be, it could be...
Well, he can still see the files, but that doesn't mean he didn't accidentally remove the preferences folder.
Right.
Move it or remove it.
Move it somewhere, yeah.
You know, for example, if you go to copy it.
Yeah, it's usually what happens is you accidentally drop it somewhere. So if he's dragging it to his backup disk and drops it, say, on the desktop...
Right,
missing the backup disk. Now the system has lost all the preferences.
If he hasn't done much to his system since this happened, could he do a search? What is it? Searchlight, Spotlight, something like for the word preferences. It should show up more than one folder, the one that's not in the right place.
Well, then he has to know which one is the right one and which one is the wrong one,
right,
and how
right,
to put
right,
it back
right,
where
right,
it belongs. And there are several preferences folders. There's system preferences. There's user preferences. There's operating system preferences. So you will find multiple folders that are right, but if the folder isn't where it belongs. And in fact, what will happen is, say you move your preferences folder out of your own library, the next time you boot, the system makes a new empty one. And that's why all your programs go back to defaults. So there'll be one where it's supposed to be, an empty one, and then your full one is going to be somewhere else.
So you'll notice one that's entirely out of place, but you have to be knowledgeable enough to know that it is out of place and where it should go.
Right. Bring it to a store, a shop. Yeah.
Bring it to a shop. All right. In the meantime, we're going to go to our next caller, Gerd from Victor, New York. I'm assuming Victor, not Victory. Are you there, Gerd?
Try that button, Dave.
Gerd, are you there?
Yeah, should I try another button there here, too?
You try another button, we'll try another button, somebody will get there.
All right, I got a couple of annoying little things that go on.
We've got Dave. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's a big annoying thing.
About every second or third time that I start my computer, it'll show Scheduled Task Manager is off. So I got to click it, go into my computer, control panel, find Scheduled Task, and it'll list a bunch of tasks, and it'll say, like, missing. So I highlight it, I right-click it, and then I just click Run. But, you know, it's just a pain to do, and is there a way of stopping that? That's number one problem.
Okay, what's number two problem?
Avast. Avast, every once in a while, down at the bottom, next to the clock, on that little twirly icon there.
Right.
We'll have a red X, and so I click it, and then I open up the Avast screen, and it'll say that my real-time shield is off. So then I have to click Fix It Now, which takes about a minute or so. It's just an annoyance.
These may have the same fix. It is possible that you have a virus.
Okay.
So I would suggest you start by dancing the Security Tango. At securitytango.com.
I know that.
All right. But for the rest of you listening, go to securitytango.com. On the left-hand side, you'll see a bunch of buttons. I believe it's a second button down says, Let's Dance. Pick your operating system. For most of you, that will be the Windows Waltz.
Yeah.
And then print that page out and follow the bouncing prompts. Don't skip any, and don't do them out of order. That may well clear up the virus, but if it is one of the really truly nasty ones, then the only way you can really fix it is to remove the drive, stick it in another machine as a slave drive so that it doesn't boot, and then clean off that drive dancing the tango on the other machine. However, if you're not equipped to do that, it's easier to bring it into someone and let them do it for you. But I do know there are a couple of viruses that will turn off the task manager.
Okay.
And certainly if it's possible that they're starting to interfere with Avast now, although I haven't seen a lot of that, but it is very possible that it's a virus.
Well, I also have Norton, and I run a scan on a pretty regular basis, and nothing shows up.
Some of the nastier viruses will block your antivirus from finding it.
Also,
especially a big program like Norton, most virus writers won't release a virus until Norton doesn't see it.
Also, when you run Norton, are you sure it's up to date? Have you been paying for it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes there's a full mode versus quick mode.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I update all my systems, programs.
Do you normally run Norton and Avast simultaneously?
No.
That's good. It still could be one of the nastier viruses. I would dance the tango to make sure it's not hiding somewhere that normally can't be gotten to by Avast or Norton. And then I would, first I would check to make sure that both my Avast and my Norton are truly up to date.
Okay.
And then I would dance the tango.
Well, Avast tells you. It talks to you. Says you're
yeah, I know. I love that.
Yeah.
But check the virus versions and when they were last updated, just to be on the safe side, by eye, just open them up and they'll tell you. And then you may well have to take it to someone if that doesn't cure it.
Last question. Which one's better, Norton or Avast?
It's like asking which one is better, green or an apple.
Right now, the new version of Vasta is Avast is very good, and the brand new Norton, which before we were saying was a piece of junk, the latest version, not the 360 and all that. The new Norton is good.
Okay.
So, you know, it's whatever your poison you like.
And is there a problem with having both on a
yes.
on a unit?
Yes.
Yeah, you really shouldn't run multiple.
You only want one. That could that would definitely do severe damage and slowing down your machine.
Yeah, they'll fight each other.
It doesn't hurt to have it on the machine if you're not running it in the background.
Okay.
But it's going
to
want
to. So if you're sure it's not running in the background, then it's okay. You should really only run one on a day-to-day basis, but having another one to run by hand once in a while is not a bad idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep-er.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Let us know what happens.
Sorry for the head to. I'm getting the hang of this board thing.
Apparently you are.
Yeah. Good. Keeps me on my toes. Yeah. I think that's why Rob does it.
Yeah. You know, all right, here we go.
See if I'm paying attention.
We got time for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Plenty of time.
Yeah.
Google's lead Android developer, Andy Rubin, tweeted, and it strikes me as odd that the lead Android developer is named Andy, tweeted that the company is activating more than 300,000 Android phones every single day. This equates to more than 9 million Android phones activated per month, despite reports that the platform's activation numbers were plummeting as of late. There are over 300,000 Android phones activated each day, Rubin's landmark announcement message read. Just 4 months after Google said it was activating more than 200,000 phones a day. The growth is because of the sheer number of Android smartphones launched in recent months and the number that are calculated. And those numbers are calculated without counting tablet activations. Samsung says that it has sold more than 1 million Galaxy Tab tablets already. So if tablets were to be included, the total activations per day figure would be even larger. Apple CEO Steve Jobs took exception to Google's calculations back in September after the company said it was activating around 200,000. After Google said it was activating around 200,000 phones per day, claiming Apple activates more than 230,000 iOS devices per day, not the ones from Cisco. Jobs then said in October that Apple was activating 270,000 iOS devices per day on average, not the one from Cisco, and occasionally daily peaks of 300,000. Nokia has also joined the competition in September, saying that it sells 260,000 phones per day, but it didn't say whether they were smartphones only or a combination of smartphones and its feature phones. Apple's number are a combination of iPhones, iPads, and iPod Touches, all of which run iOS, not the one from Cisco. The company doesn't count software upgrades. Google claims its figures are smartphones only, but did not say whether software upgrades are included, something that Jobs hinted at in September. However, one thing is for certain. Android's strength lies in the number of devices running the mobile OS, whose combined numbers are now probably overtaking Apple's numbers regardless of which way you count it. The difference is that not a single Android phone managed to pull in the sort of sales figures that any iteration of the iPhone. 1.7 million iPhone 4s were sold in just 3 days after the launch and 14.1 million units throughout September. Google's Android is now the second most popular mobile operating system in the world, behind only Nokia's Symbian OS, according to Gartner's third quarter report. Apple's iOS comes in third, followed by Research in Motion's BlackBerry OS and Microsoft Windows Mobile, bringing up the rear. So our question to you, finally leaning toward a smartphone? If so, which one? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. 966-5299, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 48 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Joel from Pittsburgh is on the line. Welcome, Joel. What's your question? Joel? Are you there?
Let me try that again.
Joel? Welcome back. All right. Joel, are you there? We're going to wait for Joel and try to get him on the air. We're coming down to the wire here, but hopefully we'll have Joel on the air in just a couple of moments. And Dave's done an excellent job throughout the show, but apparently he just fugued out a couple of minutes ago, and we're not entirely certain what happened there.
We had an interesting computing news this week. The oldest computer ever, I guess, identified has been rebuilt. The Antikytheria machine has been rebuilt out of Legos.
Nice!
Over 100 working gears. It's a 2,000-year-old mechanical computer that calculates lunar and solar eclipses.
Let's see if we can do this. Mike, you there from Buffalo?
No. You broke the phone system.
Hold on.
Dave, Dave, what did you do, Dave?
So I'm going to post a link here. So they made the Antikytheria machine out of Lego. It's two halves with eight gearboxes each.
Our next caller may possibly be Joel from Pittsford, New York. Are you there, Joel? Joel?
No, it's...
All right, we're just not going to take any more calls. We're just going to tap dance
it's
now.
It's the box.
The box is not
we
well.
We've got to reboot the phone system.
And
no, the
there
you
go.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. We have the Antikythera mechanism. And now we're out of time anyway, apparently. So that's it. We are done for another week. I want to apologize to all of those of you who were sitting and waiting before the box died. This is just a lesson. Call in earlier next week is really all you can do with that. We want to thank everybody to whom we did get today. And we'd like you to remind again, call earlier and often. But we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Linda and George are coming in next with the German program, which is always exciting. And we want to thank you very much. Don't forget, check the website, jazz901.org, for something very exciting. We'll see you all next week on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.